behind the news on Radio Ghana, linking up with all our regional FM stations. If you are in the Upper West region, Radio Upper West, and you are radio in Boga together with Radio Savannah in Tamale. As usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners by sending your text to 026-441-8767. We start with health before we get to issues of decency in the media. July 28th is observed as World Hepatitis B that people describe as dreadful. We have on the line the head of vaccines at GlaxoSmithKline, a pharmaceutical company, Mrs. Teresa Galli, to tell us much more about hepatitis B. Thank you so much for your time this evening, Mrs. Galli.
Yes, hello, good evening.
Yes, we hear so much about hepatitis B, and we are told it's more dangerous than HIV. Can you tell us exactly what it is?
Thank you very much, Kingsley, and good evening to your nationwide listeners. Hepatitis B is an infection of the liver, to put it simply, and it is caused by the hepatitis B virus, which is sexually transmitted. And the reason why it makes it more infectious than HIV is because it has the ability to live outside the body for more than a month, unlike HIV that it needs only the human blood to live. So most of the time, even when you have had a bath or you have cleansed yourself, the virus can still live on your body, especially in the genital area, and you can transmit it to somebody sexually.
Yeah. How prevalent is this in this country especially?
Thank you very much. In Ghana, as much as we don't have a lot of data to support, we still have a lot documents that actually say that one out in six of Ghanaians are living with a virus. That works out to about 5 million Ghanaians living with the virus. And the most prominent form of transmission has been from mother to child. You know, before when we had a way of screening our pregnant women before they had their babies, we were not able to detect some of these things early. But now we are able to screen women for HIV and hepatitis, so we detect it before mother passes on to child. But before, we didn't have that nationally. So a lot of people inherited the virus unknowingly from their mothers and have lived with the virus for a very long time and have spread it even to their children and to their partners.
So people living with it without any awareness, does that make it even more dangerous for them?
Yes, it is, I must say. Because what happens is that it might not be harmful if the virus is just living with you, but with time, the liver tries to eliminate the virus, because what happens is this is a virus that attacks the liver, which is the largest organ in our body. So once the liver is working overtime to be able to rid itself of the virus, it turns into something else called cirrhosis, which is, you know, scarring of the liver. And if that is not also checked or picked up, it causes liver cancer. So hepatitis B has been said to be the second leading cause of cancer after lung cancer globally.
Yeah. You've mentioned that one in six people, translating to about 5 million people. So far, how many people do you have documented who have come forward and you've tested and really confirmed to have hepatitis B?
Well, as I mentioned initially, Kingsley, I might not be able to give you an exact figure. This is from studies that we used, you know, studies that we conducted with Prof. Redu and his team in Kolebu and also in Konfuanochi and the North. We took sections of Ghanaians to see the prevalence, you know, and it was even observed that in the North it is even higher, whereas in the whole country we talk about maybe an 8% prevalence. In the North, it goes up to about 17%.
Can you tell us why we have it that way?
Yes.
Is it because of promiscuity?
I must caution that these reasons I'm going to give are not, I cannot prove them scientifically, but we try to actually extrapolate some of these causes. Apart from the low education in that area, also, you know, the way of living up there, because apart from sexual transmission, hepatitis B is transmitted through body fluids, you know, so any type of body fluid, sweat, saliva, and tears, but even though in these other fluids, apart from the sexual fluids, these are very low. And also, we also relate it to sometimes, you know, religious reasons, you know.
Yeah. I'll come back to you as to how you are working to get people aware about the existence of hepatitis and what they can even do about it. But we have joining us on the line now Dr. Nanenchi Ejin, the National Program Manager of the Expanded Program on Immunization, to see exactly how they are helping whatever effort to get it known in this country and if something should be done, what they are doing. Doctor, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
Yes, we've heard about hepatitis and we have been told how dangerous it can be. So far, what has the Ghana Health Service done or is doing together with other agencies to ensure that it doesn't really hurt our population?
Yeah, Ghana Health Service, aware of this program, has since the year 2002 introduced hepatitis B vaccination as part of the 5-in-1 vaccination for children in Ghana. So basically, those who were born after 2002 all have the opportunity to be vaccinated with the hepatitis B as part of the vaccination of children vaccination program in Ghana. But then we are also looking at the epidemiology. So we need to study it. And when we say it's for hepatitis B only, we have the vaccine. But today, it's actually World Hepatitis Day. It's not limited to hepatitis B alone. And any time there's a B, it means there's an A. And there's a B, there's a C, there's a D, there's a E. So hepatitis actually is a range of viruses of various types. A is passed through the feces, and when water or food is contaminated, it affects man. B is mainly through the serum, when blood products are infected. So before blood specimen is blood is transfused, we actually do screening in all hospitals in the country to prevent against the B and C, which the C. Hepatitis C is also transmitted through blood products. So we check the hepatitis B and C. We screen before we transfuse blood. And so far, the D and E are mainly, they don't cause, I mean, they cause hypersensitivity, E causes hypersensitivity. I mean, the B, E and E is not. The studies on it is still being developed. So, but the B and C we know about mainly pass through the serum. Okay. We are doing the screening in all hospitals.
Okay.
So soon a hepatitis program manager might be appointed with the advice from WHO.
Okay. Dr. Nanenchi Ejin, we've just heard you talking about the epidemiology of it, and we heard that for the northern part, it is so prevalent. Is there any explanation apart from what we just heard from Mrs. Galli?
Yeah, you see, the study on it is the data is not so much, and that is why I'm saying that we need to build a good surveillance system nationwide. Because if you are comparing things, you should have looked at all the various aspects. Yeah, so hepatitis can also be caused by alcohol. So when we say hepatitis, it basically means affection of the liver. So the liver can be affected by a virus. There's also alcohol hepatitis. So where consumption of alcohol is prevalent, you can also have a damage to the liver by alcohol, which can also cause hepatitis, eventually cirrhosis, and then later on in life, a complication of liver cancer also sets in. So we still need to build up data from the south, the north, all parts of the country, so that we can establish a very clear picture.
Okay.
As it is, there are pockets of information here and there.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Nchedi, I'll come back to you. But Mrs. Gali, returning to you, we've heard that there are pockets of information and the effort being made even to appoint a program manager for it, that is for hepatitis, working with the WHO. But for now, you are doing something on the ground. To what extent have you gone to let people really know about this and also take relevant action?
Thank you very much, Kings. As Dr. Nchedi said,
hello, Mrs. Gali.
Yes.
If you can please adjust your position a little. We seem to be losing you. Yes.
Okay, sorry. As I mentioned, taking it from my doctor, Nchedi left us, we have done very well as a country with respect to the expanded program on immunization. So for all children that were born late 2001 to 2002 and completed their immunization schedule, they were given the hepatitis B vaccine, that is the 5-in-1. But those that were born before that, that includes you and I and everybody else beyond that age, what we have done, especially in the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana, to create the awareness that you should screen, and make sure that your status is known, whether negative or positive. If you are negative, after you have screened from a lab that is credible, you have to protect yourself with the vaccine. And for those who have the virus, that is those who come out positive, we have centers that are managing, because at the end of the day, hepatitis infection might not be treatable but manageable. Managing the virus to a level that might not destroy the liver eventually. And especially as Dr. JJ said, the alcohol consumption is unfortunately making.
Hello? Hello? Hello, Mrs. Gali. We are losing you. If you can please try to reposition yourself so that we get you on the issue of alcohol. We didn't get anything at all there.
Yes, is it better now?
It's better.
Okay. So, Dr. Jane mentioned alcohol as one of the risk factors important inflammation of the liver. Even medications, abuse of medication, it puts a lot of damage on the liver. So what happens is that in addition to the virus and in addition to alcohol consumption and all these medications, will make one progress, have the infection or disease faster than somebody who probably does not drink or abuse medications. So we are educating as we, go along. And as he said, a project manager is about to be appointed so that we have the national policy beyond the expanded program on immunization. That what do you do when you walk to a health center, and to be screened or to be managed of the disease.
Okay. How widespread are the centers for testing?
In Greater Accra, they are basically any public or private institution is constrained for hepatitis. But for the managing, we have the gastro center at Kolebu, and then, for example, in Tema, the Port Medical have extensive ways of managing the hepatitis infection.
Okay.
In Kumasi, Konfanoche is also one of the centers. In the Western region, Fia Kwanta, most of the main, regional capitals, the district hospitals that we have there can basically screen and either vaccinate or treat or manage the disease.
Mrs. Gali, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening on Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
But that's, Dr. Nanentriaje, you are still on the line. We've heard, in spite of the fact that it's so prevalent in the north, when we asked about the centers for testing, we didn't hear so much about that place. What is going to happen?
There's a teaching hospital in Tamale. They can do the test. Bogatanga, there's a regional hospital, the district hospitals are all capable. So as I indicated, every hospital in Ghana where blood is transfused is capable of testing for hepatitis B, and every blood product is screened before we transfuse. But if anybody walks into the hospital and wants to be screened, the only thing is that they have to pay for it as it is now. And if they also need vaccination, because we've not taken a national policy of making it public health, we've not gotten the public health dimensions, so that it's declared a public health vaccine. It's not free, and people have to pay for it.
Is it very expensive?
People were importing it and making it. It was a bit expensive. So the service has also brought in some hepatitis B standalone vaccine, so that if anyone is screened and is negative and needs the vaccination, it can also be offered at our vaccination center. In Accra, Dabraka can offer it. And the regional capitals, we've discussed it with all the deputy directors of public health. And even it's available in Bogatanga. Those who are screened and need it, they can offer the vaccination.
Yeah.
I'm aware that the region recently procured a quantity of the vaccine to offer to the general public as and when it's needed after screening.
Yeah.
So the service is gradually expanding.
Yeah. You've mentioned alcohol. That is, people should keep away from abuse of it. And we've also heard from Mrs. Gali the issue of abuse of medication. What other things do you advise people should do so that they will keep away from hepatitis?
Okay. I think it's also high among drug addicts. If you exchange needles without terrorizing them, it also promotes so the spread is high among drug addicts. So obviously, we'll say that exchange of drugs and things is also a factor. Yeah. Apart from that, as I said, the focus is not on hepatitis B alone, because hepatitis is a risk. Hepatitis A is spread through feces, contaminating water and food. So we also advise on clean environment and clean observing personal hygiene, washing hands before and after eating. And I think basically, if you observe these things, we will be able to protect ourselves. And of course, I think Mrs. Gali also mentioned that we shouldn't abuse drugs. Taking of drugs in excessive quantities, even paracetamol, ordinary one, if it's a daily habit, it also does some damage to the liver and the kidney. So I think these are basically some of the essential things
yeah.
you can do.
Doc, before you go, we have a message coming in from the Bonafu region. Daniel Jan, a disease control officer, is asking, a government must subsidize hepatitis B vaccine for the poor. Is there something
yeah.
in the offing?
It's highly subsidized. On the open market, it was selling for about 20 cedis. We managed to bring it down to 6 Ghana cedis a dose. So I think it's so highly subsidized. Yeah. We don't actually, you know, we don't manufacture vaccines.
Yeah.
So what we've done is basically to give it to the public at the cost price, because we are not a profit-making organization. But to be able to recoup money to buy more vaccines so that we don't run short and we are unable to supply, that is why it's maybe currently offered at the cost price.
Okay.
On 6 Ghana cedis, it's
okay.
more than 20 on the open market.
Okay. Dr. Anantri Ajay, we want to thank you very much for also sharing these with us on Behind the News this evening.
Thank you.
That's the program manager, national program manager of the expanded program on immunization, Dr. Nana Ntriaje. Earlier, Mrs. Teresa Gali, who is the head of vaccines at GlaxoSmithKline, a pharmaceutical company and also a member of the Pharmaceutical Society of Ghana, helped us with the other issues. on hepatitis B, but we expanded the range. A few tests before we move on to our next story. Abdul Rahim from Borga is saying, sometimes when I hear about these diseases, I wonder how our forebears managed to live longer without this advanced technology in health. God save us all. And Siedu Nicholas from Kenchenku, Ghanaians should be educated on hepatitis to curb its spread. And Baba Musa will come to your text very soon. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, we are moving on to our next story. Anytime the issue of insults in our politics comes up, regular listeners of Behind the News will remember how the issue has been tackled from different perspectives in the past. However, the mere fact that it has reared its ugly head once again in the discussions prior to the election year means it continues to remain a bug. In spite of the advocacy for an issue-based campaigning, some elements have resolved not to relent in their insult-based approach. Does that mean there is no issue for politicians to discuss? Or is it the media that survives on such heightened insult climate? Behind the News once again examines the issue. And Ransom Jampo is a political analyst and a lecturer at the Political Science Department of the University of Ghana. He's joined us on the line. Thank you so much for your time, Ransom.
It's my pleasure.
Well, what do you make of the politics of insults that seem to be coming worse with each passing day?
Well, unfortunately, it is rearing its ugly head in our body politics, and I think it is very bad because we would have to focus on the discussion of issues. We are an underdeveloped country and so we'll have to focus on the discussion of issues that would help us extricate ourselves from the quagmires of poverty and underdevelopment. Insults and mudslinging and attacks on personalities are not the real issues that would help us in our struggle, in our fight against underdevelopment. And so it is not something that we should all condone. We should condemn them.
Sometimes prior to elections, we have the top hierarchy of political parties coming together, discussing the issue they all resolve, but we still find the thing existing. Can we say that they remain indifferent after getting out of such meetings?
Well, what I'm saying is that the leading political figures have not helped in the fight against this. What I expect them to do is that, look, we are a country that have a lot of respect for culture and tradition that frowns against the use of insults, you know, against people, especially the elderly. And so if the new or the young appointees or young party officials would always want to insult and to resort to these kinds of attacks and mudslinging, the adults or the elders, the elders who are the top officials should always shun them or should always come out clear to dissociate themselves with such, from such comments. But I don't oftentimes find these top political appointees or political leaders doing so. It happened, somebody in the NDC did that, and I was expecting for Samuel to come out openly to shun the person or to dissociate himself from that statement that was made. He didn't do that. Recently or yesterday, we heard what also happened, and I'm expecting Akufo-Addo to also do the same, to also come and dissociate himself. You know, in advanced jurisdiction, if you do so, the political leader there would dissociate. I mean, I know I was in the U.S. when somebody in Obama's church, was it the founder of the, or the leader of the church, made some statements that were supposed to inure to Obama's benefit, you know, Obama's electionary campaign. He had to quit the church. Okay, so my point is that if you have people who claim they support you and you go out of their way to insult others, what you must do is to shun them or dissociate yourself from the comments, derogatory comments that they may have made. And that would teach the young appointees and the young officials some lesson that we still uphold our culture and we still have a lot of respect for our elderly, and our politics cannot be dominated by personality attacks and insults, and that we should focus on issues. I think the leaders should take the lead in this regard, and others will follow.
Some are asking, is it part of a nascent democracy to be having insults as part of the game?
Well, this is a transitional or a lesser democracy, and we conduct some elections, and the key important thing is that we are fighting for survival, and we are tackle the economic problems that we have. So that, I mean, we'll be able to get advanced before we can move on to the next stage of democracy. But you can't tackle economic challenges if you focus on insults, because they are not the issues that will help us fight the problems that set us as a nation. And so, in my view, yes, some people may say that democracy is now taking its roots, and so sometimes you can't. You can expect some of these things, but at the same time, as I indicated earlier, those leaders at the helm of affairs who are not hurling insults at themselves should lead by example. Should be seen to publicly also condemning some of these occurrences, particularly that emanates from their own camp. Okay, so that we would all know that the leaders themselves found on this, so the followers must also follow.
Well, there is a quick question. Sometimes the security agencies step in, especially when it relates to the presidency. Criminal code will say that you don't malign the presidency and all. Should they step in then?
Can you take the question again?
Should the political leaders step in when the security agencies want to take up issues that they think this is against the criminal code?
Well, the most important thing is we also believe in due process. We must also have respect for due processes of law. And so it is always important that we allow the laws to take its normal course. And you would have instances where the sitting president, I mean, somebody was arrested for some having said something against him, and then he just comes in to say, look, I'm not interested in following that that matter. Sometimes one would argue that in the interest of rule of law, we should allow the law to take its normal course. But then at times too, somebody will say that the president is quite being strategic, that, look, I don't want this thing dominate our discourse because it may send all of us on a wild goose chase instead of we focusing on key issues. So then he comes in to say, look, I'm not interested in that. But all the same, I believe that the law also must be allowed to take its course. Whilst we would encourage the top political appointees to come and condemn and dissociate themselves from some of the comments, some of the insults that their followers sort of throw, to their opponents, the law must also be seen to be taking its course.
Yeah.
So that if freedom of speech should not be a license for irresponsible utterances and insults. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't tolerate that as a nation. And so, in my view, while the law should be allowed to take its course, the political leaders themselves should also be seen to be working hard to sensitize and to sending a message to their own supporters that they are not interested in insults.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Yes, a pleasure.
Yeah. Francois Jampo is a political analyst and also a lecturer at the Political Science Department of the University of Ghana. But talking about our values and all, the elderly in the society will point to a time where you step into the public domain and you won't use insulting language, especially when other elders are listening. Reverend Deuku is an elder in our society and is in charge of Atomic Hills Presbyterian Church and an advocate on strong family values. You are welcome to the show once again.
Thank you very much.
Well, have we lost it in terms of what we use to prize as a nation in respecting values?
Yes, thank you. There are two things I will say. Yes, in our cultures and in our different situations in this country, using an insulting language, it really goes against you. You must always remember that we are always sending messages, what you do, what you say. So the moment I'm seen on radio, on TV, you are heard on radio and seen on TV as somebody who uses insulting language, you damage your own reputation. Because the moment people see you outside, they'll say, oh, this is the guy. And this is the guy who uses insulting language. So people should know that when they use insulting language, they are doing damage to their own reputation. And in future, they will reap what they are sowing. That is number one. Number two, we are passing on something which is very bad to the younger generation, our children. People should know that our children are always watching us, looking at what we are doing, listening to what we are saying. And in future, they are going to do worse, that what will come out of their mouth will be worse than what is happening today. The last one is this. You know, physical violence, most of the time, physical violence comes out of verbal violence. When people begin to insult one another, then after that, they go into physical violence. And that will be dangerous for all of us.
Yeah. So, gradually, from what you are saying, our values are in decline. Is that it?
Definitely. Our values are in decline. And people should also know that if the values go down as they are going now, it becomes dangerous for all of us. Look, I happened to be in Liberia before the war started. And it started like this. This person insulting that person, this person insulting that person. And finally, it was lifted out of just a verbal insult. And then it resulted in guns and people killing one another to a point where it was even difficult for you to say that you want to go to the market and buy food for your family. So we have to be careful about these values that are declining.
Yeah. You have worked on family issues, family values for some time. Do you think we are providing that environment where people are nurtured and can even be called by families to order when they are going contrary to principles like that?
I believe that in some areas of our country, and I'm happy to say that even in our villages, people are still able to call others to order. However, we those who think that, most of the people who think that they are in the city, they've gone to school, they talk about freedom, they talk about democracy, they are rather doing the worst things. You see, they are doing, you see somebody, you hear his name, you hear his GPs and so on, and what comes out of the person's mouth to the other person, you find it very, very distasteful. So we have to be very careful, and there is nothing wrong in learning from our brothers and sisters in the villages who are still able to control their family and let their family members speak well to the elders and to others.
If the family is not being able to do it well, especially for those in the urban areas, can we say religion is playing its expected role?
You see, religion is playing its expected role. But one of the things you should know is that after you've gone to the church, you've spoken, you've preached the sermon, the people who heard you preaching are supposed to go home. They are free. You cannot follow them to their house. They are free to go home and practice what they heard in the church. And they go and they don't practice them. Yes, I believe that religion is still playing its role. But because we cannot control the people after we've closed from church, and some people only come to the church, listen to the word, they won't read their own Bibles and apply it to their lives. Because of that, these things are growing. But I believe that the churches are playing their roles.
You are also associated with the media in one way or the other. Are we helping the situation?
As for the media, I sometimes I feel very I have a problem with them, because You see, sometimes you see somebody is moderating a program, and somebody is using these distasteful words, and he will not say anything about it. He will let it go. And I believe that the media associations in the country must just wake up and find a way to speak and tell their people, those who moderate programs on radio and TV, to also be able to moderate and control their programs in such a way that those words and those insults will not come out.
Reverend Deuku, we want to thank you very much for your time with us this evening.
Thank you so much for calling.
Well, we want to alert listeners that the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation has launched a campaign for decency in the media, with a call on media practitioners to also regulate themselves through the introduction of clear editorial policies that will be reviewed regularly. That is the information. So from our perspective, we are trying to push an agenda that will help the whole society in that direction. But we have some of your tests here before we get to other people on the same naughty issue. Certainly, every well-meaning Ghanaian should condemn the use of insults. AU Farouk sent in that one. And Andrew Manga, Ghanaians should not hide behind politics to make negative remarks about others. Let's respect whoever is a leader. And Paul Robertson was Ekropon, we should do everything possible to avoid insults in our politics. Akoto Razak Tamale, it's time we face issues with facts and stop the insults. Kojo Akins from Cape Coast, when politicians find themselves in opposition, they resort to insults. NDC did it to MPP, and they responded with NDC in power, MPP are doing the same. Parties in opposition must be blamed. And Lukman Gushu, you are sending in this one that says, decorous language is urgently required. Yes. That precisely, we do agree with you. And Baba Musa UDS, the reckless and unguarded statements being made by some citizens must not be allowed to go unpunished. Well, those that go against the law, we've been told by Ransford that the law should really take its course. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, this one, Bashir Protocol from Bonson Kwanta, Western Region. Dissonance in the media can only be achieved if program moderators can stamp strict authority in their programs. We are taking a quick break. When we come back, we have different perspectives on the same issue we are talking about. We'll be back. Behind the news on Radio Ghana is still linking up with all our regional FM stations, Radio BR in Sunyan, Prince City Radio in Sekendi Takoradi, Radio Central in Cape Coast, and then Volta Star in Ho, that is if you are around the Obonu 96.5, if you are in Tema. And in Accra, linking up with all the rest, unique 95.7 megahertz. We'll pick a quick story from Agatha before we take the other perspectives.
The presiding bishop of the Methodist Church Ghana, Most Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante, has condemned attacks on President Mills and the presidency. Speaking to the media at the castle, he said the president's decision of not being interested in the arrest and interrogation of John Kuma, an NPP activist, by the police, is a mark of a Democrat. It should therefore not be misconstrued as a sign of weakness. On politics of insults, Most Reverend Professor Asante said any attack on the presidency is a castigation of the country's democracy. He said freedom of speech is not a license for some people to malign others to the extent of lying.
Thank you, Agatha. And still on the issues, Lawyer Seko Kwajuado is a lecturer in media law at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. We have him on the line now. Thank you so much, sir, for your time.
Very well.
From the perspective of media law, how dangerous is the trend of accusations and counter-accusations and the use of foul language?
You see, foul language, you see, for now, I'll put it in context. And what I'll say is that Ghanaians do not understand free speech. You see, the idea or the conception of free speech is something that I think Ghanaians will have to take some time to understand it, because at the end of the day, free speech has some limitations, but it looks as if politics has so much divided us that we do not understand what we mean by free speech. And when we talk about insults, what does insult mean? Insult simply means saying something to bring down the reputation of somebody in the eyes of right-thinking members of society. Saying something about somebody to bring down his reputation in the eyes of right-thinking members of society. And now, the politicians believe that if you do that and you bring down the reputation of somebody, then it means you are winning points. And the politicians are again aware of the fact that many of their opponents, who are also politicians, will not go to court. Look at what has happened to the president, saying that the president is sleeping with women. Is sleeping with men. And their wife is also sleeping with dogs, which is very, very serious. And you know, certainly, the president will not go to court on this matter. But at the level of moral and ethics, if you think this is right for you to say, then it's up to you. And again, politicians think Ghanaians are fools to the extent that if you say this about the president, then it means you scored political points and it will help you win elections. This is the problem that we have now on our hands. And it looks as if there are voters or whoever who are prepared to buy into this kind of lies.
Yeah.
Insults.
Lawyer Sekweju, when you mention it that way, does that mean that a segment of our population would like to hear this one so that they will reinforce their positions in particular organizations or parties in this case?
You see, if you listen to 4 Ins and you listen to radio discussions, you are about to believe that this is what Ghanaians want at the moment. And so the media, you and I, this is what we are turning out. This is what we open our phone lines for. This is what we expect our programs to do. And so if there's a particular program that is not filled with so much insult and so much lies, people do not turn into that. People do not tune into that program.
Have we set the right agenda, if that is the case? Because sometimes I'll tell you, from the perspective of somebody handling some of these things, a purely social but beneficial issue will not get a response. So people will say, it's not exciting, throw in some fire.
That's the problem. And it all boils down to the fact that people are simply hungry for power. At a point too, you can reduce all this to the incidence of poverty in our country, which means if you are able to insult to get some money, then you've created a job for yourself.
Yeah, but let's look at the issues of slander and libel the way they are. Sometimes when you listen, do you think those handling or perhaps those speaking are aware that it can be taken on, even though we don't have a criminal libel law existing?
Yes, fine. The criminal libel law is gone. Now what we have is civil libel. And civil libel means if somebody brings down your reputation, you only have to go to court to redeem your lost reputation. Now, what is happening is, at the level of politics as we have now, the politicians are not going to court to seek redress. The question is, why are they not going to court to seek redress? You see, because there is the easy way out. That is to get another media house to return fire for fire. You see, and so now what the politicians are doing is they are settling scores at their own level. They are not going to the courts to seek redress at all. And look at what President Mills has just done. He said that, leave the man, let him go. So now what about if somebody from the NDC also takes it up to make a big fight out of it? And nobody's going to go to court out of it. Nobody's going to go to court. What do we do? So now it is a field day for them. And the media is also fanning it. And fanning it. So this is a problem at the level of let's say doing some kind of research. This is a very big problem for the country. That why are the politicians simply going at each other and the courts seem not to matter for the politicians? You see, and it is simply reducing our politics to the level of what somebody would call base level, which is where thinking does not matter, because the politicians are bent on simply looking for naked political power and not reasonable political power.
Yeah. So what do you suggest? Because you are trying to find effective solutions,
now,
even as we talk.
At the end of the day, there is just one option. Allow them. Because it looks as if reason, you see, will not work. So allow them to finish themselves off. Excuse me to say, with the greatest respect, this is not the right or the best solution. But as it is now, you cannot speak to one side and you see reason.
Are we then not throwing our hands in despondency and saying, we've lost it all, let it go, and then...
No. Oh, you see, all the rubbish that we are hearing is good. It's all good. Because at one level, too, we are so immature in democratic politics to the extent that when we see political power and we want to go and take it, we use all manner of foul means to go and take it. So let's allow... And you see, the electorate is the problem at the moment. It is the electorate that must see through this and let the politician know that what you are doing is wrong. But, my brother, the Ghanaian electorate is very discerning and very wise. They are not the type of politicians that we have, you see. And so they are going to tell the politicians what they want and what they do not want, you see. So let us leave it to the electorate. The electorate will discipline the politicians.
Okay.
If the politicians think that it is insult that will help them come into power, the electorate, the voters are looking at them.
Okay. Lawyer Sekwajuadu, we want to thank you very much for joining the discussions. But I know by saying that leave them, you are saying that you are looking for a bigger judge that is in the number of terms that decide on whether the insults were right or not.
That is it.
Thank you so much. That's a lecturer in media law at the Ghana Institute of Journalism. Pastor Suleiman Abrahima is the Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. They have been concerned recently when talking about corruption and raising other issues in a study. They were looking at what should really be covered. That should be done very well. Suleiman, you are welcome to the show.
Good evening, and thank you very much.
I know you are disturbed by the trend. As a foundation, what exactly do you want to do?
Well, clearly, it is a disturbing trend, and we at Media Foundation, as an organization that promotes freedom of expression and media development across West Africa, these are trends that definitely we are worried about. We continue to work on various projects that are aimed at improving the media's performance. Yes, freedom of expression is a fundamental, prerequisite for building every democracy. Democracy without citizens' participation perhaps is a different form of governance and not democracy. So fundamentally, it is important to establish that freedom of expression is important in every democracy. But the freedom to express oneself is different from saying that people have the freedom to insult others or people have the freedom to abuse others. You know, that is the distinction that we must clearly explain. And if I may quote a statement that was made by Professor Mel some time ago, that the fact that we have the freedom of speech does not mean we must speak all the time. You know, if you have nothing to say, it's better to shut up rather than to say, well, the Constitution guarantees freedom of speech, and so I must find something to say, regardless of whatever, whether what you are going to say will make sense or not. So, yes, it is important for citizens to express themselves, but it is about the quality of expression, the quality of the issues that are raised, and the quality of the issues that are discussed that would lead to the promotion of our democracy, and not just that citizens are expressing themselves. For all you know, perhaps it is noise, you know, and noise is not what we need, but real contributions to ideas and policies and issues are what we need to build our democracy.
Yeah. So you are talking about the fact that some have not learned to balance it with responsibility. Do you think maybe from your studies, people have come to appreciate what Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes mentioned, that falsely shouting fire, fire in a crowded theater will not guarantee you any freedom of expression? Are people really aware about that?
I'm asking that quite clearly, yes.
You know, we are talking about freedom of expression, and yes, sometimes where you have to caution people, they think they have that freedom. They must be able to express themselves. And I'm asking, contrasting it with what was said, that you just can't jump into a crowded theater and start shouting fire, fire falsely. Do people see that line too?
So, you see, I think that the problem is that people are failing to appreciate the fact that every freedom goes with a responsibility. You know, the fact that you have freedom to life does not mean you can do everything that you want in order to live. You cannot kill to say, I think I must kill to live. You know, in the same way, the Constitution guarantees people the freedom to express themselves, the freedom of speech. But of course, it is important to also always remind ourselves that so long as we have that freedom, we also have a responsibility to make sure that the freedom of others are not abused.
Yeah.
And that is what I think that our media is not helping.
Yeah.
I heard one of the speakers who spoke earlier make the point that it appears today, I think it was yourself who said, sometimes listeners feel that a program is quite boring.
It is social.
Yes, and so throw in some fire or things to make it hot. I think what should make a program is not about the shouting and the insults that go on in the studio, but the quality of analysis, the quality of questioning, putting people on the spot. You have said this, but it appears that facts on the ground do not support what you are saying. I think that is what people would want to hear. That is what people expect, and perhaps that is what we are beginning to call fire.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, in Ghana today, you have a radio station that had its guest or panelist in a studio, throw blows, actually fight in the studio, which for me should be considered as an embarrassing situation for both the radio station and also to the panelists. But unfortunately, to demonstrate that this particular program is hot, you have the radio station playing back the incident to advertise the program. You know, so if we begin to see these kinds of unprofessional attitudes, then you can expect that people or program hosts or journalists would even do things to encourage panelists in the studio to say things that are offensive, just to say, well, my program is hot. But I don't think that is what we need in our democracy. Those things are, in fact, things that can actually ignite trouble for us. And I believe people are also taking our democracy for granted, that, well, where we've gotten to, nothing can happen. I mean, Ghana would not go to war. But that is a deceitful attitude. If we begin to go along that line, we may be deceiving ourselves. I am not predicting, or I'm not saying that something should happen. But whether something will happen or not depends on we, the citizens. I think we have the peace. We must protect it and enjoy the peace that we have.
Yeah. We want to thank you very much. I know you won't end it here. You will be continuing with the effort.
Oh.
So we'll be following up on whatever you are doing to still help maintain that decency and decorum we are talking about in the media.
Yes, if I may add, in fact, tomorrow in the afternoon, the Media Foundation for West Africa is organizing a press conference actually to address this particular issue. So I believe that GBC would have had his invitation, but let me just use this opportunity to also say that, well, GBC and the other radio stations and media organizations are invited to this particular important press conference that will be held at the press center at 2 p.m. tomorrow.
It's a concerted effort. We'll see exactly what comes out of it. Thank you so much, Suleiman Abraima, Deputy Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. But sometimes the blame is pushed to the doorstep of the association that brings media people together. Can they be blamed? Arthur Money is the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association. Can you really be blamed, or can we be blamed?
Let me admit that perfection in any human institution is an impossible goal. So as a media institution, we have our fair share of imperfections. But this does not score the fact that we have a good size. But if Ghana democracy has reached this far, if Ghana today is touted as the center of democracy in Africa, or as a beacon of democratic accomplishment, it's because the media have played their roles effectively. But what is happening, the signals, the same signals we pick up, also reinforce the need for us to sit up, to do things which might not escalate the tensions, which might in turn lead to conflict, horrendous human slaughter, and other negativity. So we are appealing to our media institutions, appealing to media partners, appealing to media consumers to help us to wage a relentless war to sanitize our airwaves, to deodorize the foul language on the airwaves, and to, you know, concertize our people to play it fair as we approach election 2012.
Yeah, previously you've mentioned that it's an association. You just don't have compelling power. So what next are you going to do? Like the Media Foundation, they want to take it a step further and keep raising the concerns.
Indeed, our hands are tied when it comes to taking punitive action against offending journalists. But the fact also remains that we have a weapon which is more punitive than cracking the whip against offending journalists. That is namely and shaming. It is said that every journalist has only one thing to lean on, that is reputation or integrity. So once your reputation or integrity is punctured, once your integrity is brought into disrepute, then you have nothing at all to hang on. And then you become so ordinary, so weakened, so ashamed that you know, you think twice when you try to get into a gutter with the politicians who might seize every opportunity to score political goals, either foul or fair.
Well, the campaign continues, but for now, I want to thank you very much for being part of it today.
Thank you, Kingsley. Kingsley, we pray and hope that our people will see reason and and learn from the genocidal spectacle in other countries so that we don't go that line.
Yeah. Arthur Money is the Vice President of the Ghana Journalists Association. And before we go, some of your tests here. The media should not replay tips of insults. Blaise Mandari sent that one. And Joe Donay from Sirigu. It is very easy to become popular in Ghana. Just insult a leader and you will get some individuals to back you. Oh, Ghana deserves better. And African brother at Datco, politicians should not lead Ghanaians into problems. They should mind their own business. And the lab, NDC and MPP supporters must stop this politics of insults and indiscipline. Are we not abusing our freedom of speech? And Aziz, politics of insults will not get us water, good roads, lighting systems, etc. We need peace and unity in our dear nation, Allah save Mother Ghana. And politics of insults should be condemned in Ghana by all. Wisdom from Pando. And most Ghanaian journalists rather do not understand freedom of speech instead. Kojo Akins is sending that one again, and that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of our production team of Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmond Tete, with my production assistant Bright Entrama, and also Agatha Asamoa, who sat at the controls, and Ose Balubi, who was there. My name is Kingsley of Intre. When it's right, let's keep doing it.